183, chapter 13. And the clarity of pure devotion said, I wish to know nature and consciousness, the field and the one who knows the field, wisdom and what should be known, O embodiment of the functions of creation, preservation, and transformation. And this verse is not numbered because it's not generally included in various versions of the Gita. It's one of those disputed verses which we have included without a number. You know, the Gita has 700 verses as reported in the text, but there are actually 728. So which ones are the right ones and which ones are the wrong ones, we don't know. The respected Supreme Divinity said, this body is known as the field, O son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna. Who knows this is called one who knows the field by those who know. Know me as the one who knows all fields, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. The wisdom of the field and of the one who knows the field, in my opinion, constitutes wisdom. So remember, our first verse of the Bhagavad Gita is Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. And now, on the field of all action, of the field of the ideals of perfection. Now, Krishna is saying, this body is the field. This is the place of Dharma. This is the place of all action. This is the battlefield. This is the field that we're talking about. Who knows the field and knows the knower of the field, that is wisdom. And who knows the one who knows all the fields, that, in my opinion, constitutes the highest wisdom. Hear from me briefly what is the field, where it is, what it is like, how it changes, what is its illumination. This has been sung in many ways by sages in various meters and even in distinctive words full of decisive reasoning outlining the knowledge of Supreme Divinity. The great elements, the five Mahabhutas, Chidi, Ap, Tej, Morud, Bom, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The ego, Ahamkar, intellect, Buddhi. The unmanifest, the ten senses, the one, the objects of perception, desire, repulsion, pleasure, pain, the aggregate of all consciousness, consistency. This is a brief description of the manifestation of the field. Humility, modesty, causing harm to none, patience, the purification of knowledge, worship of the teacher, purity, consistency, self-control, no attachment to the objects of perception, no egotism, perception of the limitations in birth, death, old age, maladies, and pain, no attachment or identification with the body, children, spouse, or home, constant equanimity of consciousness, even on the attainment of the desirable and the undesirable. Consistent union with me, unswerving devotion, visiting quiet and peaceful places, distaste for the society of men, always residing in spiritual wisdom, perceiving all objects with the wisdom of the principles. This is proclaimed as wisdom, and all that is opposed is ignorance. Everything that binds us to worldliness, the rejection of everything that binds us to worldliness is called wisdom, and all that is opposed is called ignorance. I explain that which should be known, knowing which one attains to the nectar of immortality, the supreme divinity without beginning, which is said to be true being and non-being. It exists, encompassing all, with hands and feet everywhere, with eyes, head, and mouth everywhere, and ears in all the worlds, radiating light because of the qualities of the senses, supporting all prohibition of attachment to the senses, totally without quality. Such is the experiencer of all qualities. It is outside and inside of all beings, whether they move or move not. And because it is so subtle, it is unknowable. It is far and it is near. It is undivided in beings, yet appears as if divided. It exists as the supporter of all beings born and should be known because of generating and dissolving. The light of all lights. It is said to be beyond darkness. Wisdom, the wisdom which should be known, the goal of wisdom, situated in the hearts of all. Thus the field, wisdom, and what should be known have been briefly explained. My devotee who knows this enters into my being. Know that both nature and perfect consciousness are without beginning, and all changes in any quality arise from nature. And there is a definition given for nature, literally, before becoming this. Sounds like an excellent idea for a title of a book. Mahavira is so clever. Nature is said to be the cause of the actions of cause and effect. Perfect consciousness is said to be the cause of the experience of pleasure and pain. Indeed, perfect consciousness situated within nature experiences the qualities born of nature. Attachment to qualities is the cause of birth in true or evil wombs. The silent witness in the body is also called the one who allows, the one who supports, the one who enjoys, the great seer of all, the supreme soul, and the supreme perfect consciousness. Who thus knows perfect consciousness and nature with their complete expression of qualities, they will not be born to the present circumstance again. By meditation, some perceive the soul in its own self. Some perceive the soul by their own selves. Others perceive by union with the enumeration of principles, and others by union with action. So there are many ways by which to perceive the self. Some perceive that self by meditation. Some perceive it through philosophy, through enumerating the principles. Some perceive it by uniting with their actions through karma yoga. Still others, themselves not knowing but having heard from others, cross beyond death by regarding what they have heard as supreme truth. If you have faith in what you've heard in the teachings of wisdom, if you have that faith, you can cross beyond death, even not having experienced it yourself. Not understood it completely or experienced it yourself, but you just have faith. That too is sufficient to take you across the ocean of death. Because of your faith, you dwell in immortality. Whatever is born to true existence, whether moving or unmoving, results from the union of the field with the one who knows the field. Nature and consciousness, O best of descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. So everything that we perceive is the union of Purusha and Prakriti, nature and consciousness, the field in union with the knower of the field. He sees equally the supreme divinity established in all beings, the imperishable who sees the perishable. Seeing the Supreme Consciousness dwelling equally everywhere, he does not despise himself, but goes to the supreme goal. He sees that only nature performs all actions, and the soul who sees is without action. When he perceives the various varieties of existence established in the One, and from that One alone this all has come, then he becomes the Supreme Divinity. That's neat. When he perceives the various varieties of existence established in the One, and from that One alone this all has come, then he becomes the Supreme Divinity. Without a beginning, without qualities, this supreme soul is imperishable. Though situated in a body, it neither acts nor is imposed upon. O son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna. The all-pervading ether is so subtle that it is not imposed upon. So also the soul, situated everywhere throughout the body, is not imposed upon. Just as one sun illuminates the entire world, so the Lord of the field illuminates the entire field, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. Those who know the distinctions between the field and the one who knows the field, seeing through the eye of wisdom, are freed from the nature of existence and they go to the Supreme. If we're able to discriminate between the transitory nature of the field and the permanent nature of the knower of the field, and say these actions are being performed for the transitory field and these actions are being performed for the eternal knower of the field. If we have that type of discrimination, seeing through the eye of wisdom, they are freed from the nature of existence and they go to the Supreme. Just by maintaining that discrimination. That this is important to me and that's not. And this is going to take me where I want to go and that's a tangent. And the transitory worldliness that we're experiencing and clinging to is merely a transient bondage to the transient. And fixing ourselves in wisdom and discrimination, we become one with the eternal. Are there any questions?
So, what's this whole issue in 32 and 33 about something's not imposed upon?
The all-pervading ether. The ether is the absence of any element. Earth is the most gross. Water, fire, air, and ether, the most subtle. Now, the most subtle means that there's space there. Ether is not really an element itself. It's the absence of anything, which allows for vibration to occur. I mean, if everything, if there was no ether, there could be no movement because it would just be molecules packed against molecules all the way. The ether allows for the displacement of the molecules to move to another place. So he's saying that the all-pervading ether is so subtle that it is not imposed upon. Nothing can impose itself upon the ether. It merely moves through the ether, but doesn't. It has no imposition. There's no impact of the movement because of its subtlety. Just so, the soul is situated everywhere throughout the body, and it is not imposed upon. Just as the ether is to the universe, so is the soul to the body. In other words, we say that the substance in the container or the air within the container is the same as the air outside the container. The only difference is the definition, the container. That's right. The quality of the soul is that it accepts no imposition. It merely witnesses. It merely watches. It is not imposed upon.
Is the soul only contained in the body, or is it also outside the body?
He said it's outside. It is inside and it is outside.
Does it have a physical limit?
No.
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 Now we know there's one soul.
Yes.
But there also... We talk about each of us having a soul. Sort of like the waves of the ocean, right?
Yes.
And when they go back into the ocean, then they're part of the ocean, but they come out for a minute, and then we call it a big wave or a little wave. Is that how we can think about the souls?
That's a nice way to think about it. There are many other allegories that you can use as well.
So, for instance, when we're sitting here, well, maybe it's like 10 or 12 people with some individuation of the soul, correct?
No.
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 These are not waves?
No, these are not waves. From that point of view, they are. If you took 10 pots of water and held it in outside and let the moonlight shine in each pot, you'll see the reflection of the moon in each of the pots, right? And these containers are reflecting just the same soul of the universe from a slightly different angle. That is, your container is here, and her container is there, and his container is there. We're just a few feet away from each other reflecting the same moonlight.
Is there some physical quality to the soul?
No.
No.
No. Just like the ether. It has no physical quality. The soul is the capacity of recognition. The capacity to perceive. It has no physical substance whatsoever. It is pure awareness. Consciousness.
So it's everywhere.
Yes. Your soul is everywhere. Your soul is in the person next to you. And when you speak of my soul, then it's
not really right.
It's not really right. It's our soul. So it's there's only one soul.
We're all kind of sharing.
Yeah. Thanks. It's a fillet of soul. Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It seems like there's several types of deals you can make to get across the ocean of death. One deal is you can cross beyond death by regarding what these people have heard as a supreme truth. Just by regarding it, just having heard of it, you can cross over the ocean of death.
Yes.
And you can cross over the ocean of death just by chanting God's name, thinking God's name at the time that you leave.
Yes.
At the time of death also, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the mechanics of that? How does that work? I mean, it's sort of like, there's a deal here that if you do this at the right time, mm-hmm. you'll be okay, in spite of all your sins or whatever invisible things you did to other people.
Well, actually, the deal says, you got to read the fine print, that in order to chant the name of God at the last moment of your life,
you got to be chanting it all the time.
Well, first of all, no one knows when that's going to happen. And second of all, if you haven't chanted it all your life, it's very, very improbable that you're going to think to chant it at the moment that you leave. And the second thing about the deal with the guy who just believes is you got to really believe it. I mean, it just can't be, oh, yeah, I know that's true. I'll get to that some other time. It's got to be a quality of faith that makes it incumbent upon us to act in accordance with that faith. I mean, I believe it so much that my life has changed because of it. I don't want the other things because of my faith. I don't want the other worldliness.
Because I
believe it, and I don't really understand it, and I haven't experienced it, but I have faith. And so I'm going to accept the guru to take me across, or God to take me across because of my faith and my surrender.
And then what does it also mean to be taken across? I'll leave if you want. I'll just go away.
Well, I would define it as being filled with so much devotion that we forget about our personal, our selfish goals, our personal or selfish attachments, our desires to enjoy or be comfortable or to find something for ourselves. I believe that's, for me, what it means to be taken across. To be taken just totally out of myself. To be so filled with devotion that I forget about me.
You're saying it has really nothing to do with the time of death of the body?
Oh, not at all. It's the death of the ego. It has nothing to do with the death of the body. That's the only death that we're concerned with. Because we know that after this body, there's another body, and so what? It's not a question of which cloth you're wearing or which body you're wearing. It's a question of how the ego has surrendered to godliness. Is ego attached to worldliness, or is the soul free to fly with godliness? Now, if I'm thinking about my own selfish desires and what's in it for me and what can I get, and I'm scheming and conniving and thinking I'm going to go enjoy this and I'm going to pay for it later, and my ego is attached to worldliness and I become the most important character in my vocabulary of experience. When I become filled with faith and full of devotion, all I can think of is you. And I, the concept of I, is only valid to me insofar as it enhances you in another way. It enhances you by letting this I chant with abandon, or do the fire ceremony, or sing, or write, serve you in any way I can to demonstrate the sincerity of my love. We all want to be loved that way. So totally loved. Doesn't she feel the same way? Wouldn't God want to be loved that way too? So for me, that's how I define being taken across. To be so filled with devotion and so full of love and so full of abandon that Ramakrishna told the great parable, the cow said, Amba, Amba. And then when they cut the cord.
Tula.
Yeah. So when they card the wool, and you have this big pile of wool, and you separate the wool so that it can be made into a comforter or a pillow or stuffing of some kind. When you start plucking on the machine, it says, me, me, me. And when it's all refined and all the processes have been completed and it's all cohesive and united and soft and usable, it says, you, you, you. That was the parable. And he also talked about the pot of boiling rice.
Anything, cooking.
Yeah, well, when you walked into the kitchen and you see the rice starting to boil, it's still a kacha. It's still raw, and it's going bup, 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 bup.
When done, quiet.
Our whole action is that way.
Be settled.
So when you ask me what it means for me to be taken across, it means to be you, 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 or silent. It means to be like the wool that has been totally fluffed and united. To be saying you, 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 or it means to be like the rice in the that's already cooked, just silent.
Doesn't the relationship of a husband and a wife, or a husband and the kids, accomplish or move in the same direction as that? And the wife also, I mean, she does everything for the husband. She's so devoted to the husband and to the children. Everything that she does is for them. Everything that the husband does is for the wife and for the kids. Doesn't that play a similar role as the disciple with the guru?
If they do it from purity without an attachment to worldliness, yes.
Because it's hard to do.
Yes, it is hard to do.
When he's out there working.
Yeah.
Bring home food, and the more...
Or she's out there working to bring home food.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. It's hard to come home and remember that you're living with God and you got together because you wanted to remind each other that you're divine. You wanted to constantly encourage each other to remember God in everything that you do. That's why we started this relationship in the first place. That's why anyone gets married. It's because they feel God has come, brought them together to work together, to remind each other all the time that you're divine. And then after a while, you start complaining to each other.
You probably don't do satsang every night.
Probably, possibly. I mean, some married couples are very intelligent and they move to an ashram with a beautiful guru. And then they do satsang as much as they can. And then they have satsang in the morning when they drive to work. And they have satsang all day because they get to be with each other all day long. And they get to remind each other all day long what a privilege it is to live in the divine company. How lucky they are that they married each other, that they got married to Shiva and Shakti. But there are very, very few people who are fortunate to have such divine perception. Most people get married and they move away and they settle down into a life of trying to enjoy and then try to pay for the enjoyment. And before they know it, they have responsibilities and obligations and commitments that they've assumed before they even thought about it. And after a while, just piles of resentment grow up all around them. And they are tolerating the burdens of life. And that happens all too frequently, which is what keeps our good friend Mahavir employed. Thank goodness.
Because Mahavir is too smart for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he wouldn't let it happen to him. No. No. So,
This is really good.
Uh-oh. Well, that's why we're having satsang every night, yeah. So that we could remind each other what a privilege it is to think about God. Because you know what the alternative is. Think about the world. Those are the two choices. Think about godliness or think about worldliness. And we all know where that leads. To attachment, pleasures and pains and the cycles of transformation. Ad nauseum. Are there any other questions? Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Thank you. You can turn that
machine. Who are you?
Who are you?
Shivoham, Shivoham.